to do with the hearing period.
House Transportation Committee will come to order and welcome everybody. We can go ahead and get started since we're informational again. I've brought in, the department come in and talk about transit, but I brought in, asked to have transit services around the state come today and kind of explain the differences between the types of services that are out there and near and far. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and ask Kelsey Wilson to come up. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kelsey Wilson. I'm the association manager for the Oregon Transit Association. And I'm going to leave it to my members behind me to do most of the heavy lifting today and talk to the specific issues that they're dealing with. But wanted to just give you a little background. The Oregon Transit Association formed in 1978. It was formed by the state's three largest transit providers to represent interests at the state capitol. Today, we're a statewide nonprofit association. We have about 70 members. Those include transit providers, some of the transit vendors, and also some individuals who support transit. You'll hear from members from urban and rural areas today, small and large systems. You'll hear about how ridership is growing exponentially and funding is falling. You'll hear from some users of the system who rely on transit as a lifeline in their areas. You'll also hear about transit legislation that the Transit Association and some of our members are supporting, and how you can be helpful in making transit a more competitive mode of transportation across the state. Public transportation plays a key role in many public policy decisions. It's a transportation decision, it's an economic development decision, it's a human service, and it's an environmentally friendly mode of transportation. House Bill 2122, the Jobs and Transportation Act, is key legislation for us. Representative Beyer has House Bill 2379 that's a funding for transportation for seniors and people with disabilities. And there's also House Bill 2122 that has some funding for transportation for seniors and people with disabilities. Attached to my testimony, you will find some profiles of independents from some of your constituents in your area, as well as a few from statewide users of the system who rely on transit every day to go to the grocery store, to medical appointments, and to maintain their quality of life. So with that, I would be happy to answer any questions, and thank you for the opportunity for transit to come and talk to you today.
Thank you. I don't see anything yet, so you're going to hang around in case
we
need
here
to ask you any questions. And Fred Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I wasn't sure.
Madam Chair, yes.
Well, I'm just here really to thank you for doing this today and giving us all an opportunity to appear before you, right before you hear about the Governor's Jobs and Transportation Act. We really appreciate having an opportunity to talk a little bit about what we do.
Thank you. Also, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Fred Hansen, General Manager of TriMet. That's the transit district in the greater Portland region. I think that it goes without saying that these are tough and trying times. Certainly you wrestling with budgets here, but across this state, across the nation. And transit's no different. Certainly the issues we're facing, and I'll come back to some of those challenges in a few minutes. But I do want to share with you just for a few minutes some of the things that are particular to the TriMet system, the largest within the state. We are large. We, in the month of January, for example, just past January, we provided just under 325,000 trips, about one-third of those on our light rail system, the MAX system, about two-thirds on the bus system. And ridership, as you were seeing in some of the information that will be passed out, and I'm not going to go through that brochure that you you're receiving. But one of the things that's been is quite amazing is that we in the greater Portland region are ranked 7th in the nation on a per ridership, on a ridership per capita basis. And for a medium-sized western younger city, that's remarkable given that obviously a number one place is New York City, but you have the Bostons, the Philadelphias, the Washington, D.C.s, as well as San Francisco. Significant is also that a large portion of our riders are called what we call choice riders. That is, they have a vehicle or access to a vehicle but choose to be able to ride transit. In fact, over 70% of the riders are what we call that choice rider. What it means is that in many ways we are competing with the automobile, and to do so, we must be able to be innovative, we must be able to be attractive, we must be able to provide people with a quality experience. In that regard, we think that some of the innovations we have put in place are particularly important. You can go online and be able to plan any trip, including the walking portion of that trip and the transit portion of that trip. In fact, we were chosen nationwide by Google as the first transit property to be able to, in fact, have them develop their transit Google capability, now available in numerous cities around the United States and, in fact, around the world. We also have what we call Transit Tracker, and that is the ability to be able to either go online or from your cell phone to be able to call up and find out not what the next scheduled time of arrival of the bus or the MAX train would be, but the actual arrival time. It counts down in minutes, 13 minutes, 12 minutes, 11 minutes, and so on. What we find when we have that is that people, as all of us want, we want to be able to control our time. We want to be able to make use of it, to know whether or not we can go get a cup of coffee, pick up a newspaper, or do we have to really just stay right there because the bus or the train is just right about ready to arrive. In fact, in London, England, where they first developed this this technology, they did a before and after study. They found that people believe that that when the available actual arrival time information was there, it in fact provided they had more likely that the train or bus was on time, that it was more frequent, and that it was higher quality service. None of which was true because it was all exactly the same. But it's that idea of having information that is tremendously important. We also believe it is tremendously important for us to be able to be operating as efficiently as we can, and we have now in the 10th year of a project we call the Productivity Improvement Process, where we engage our frontline workers in being able to come up with smarter, better ways to be able to do our business. In fact, we were just chosen in one of these projects by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency as an award winner to be able to develop a new technology that really came forward from our frontline workers to be able to make our buses more fuel efficient by introducing a more like NASCAR type technology to our buses. The challenges ahead of us are, though, very great, some of which you will be hearing when you look at that legislation that I know you will be this next week, but it's also, I think, highlighted in that New York Times article that is before you as well. This is not an issue that's just within the Oregon or in the western part of the United States. This is across the country. And the challenges are great. We are seeing our operating revenues decrease. We, in fact, I've ordered a 5% reduction across the board. We are with been able to utilize some of the federal stimulus money that will be flowing to TriMet in a very narrow category. We're able to offset on the service side reductions in half of that. That is about 2.5%. But if the economy continues to worsen, we will, in fact, have to be looking at the thing that we in the transit world always hate to ever think about doing, and that is cutting service, because that is what we're all about. The challenges in elderly and disabled are particularly challenging as well. Our Lyft service, and we do provide not just the minimum required by the Americans with Disabilities Act, but we actually provide a greater level of service, really a door-to-door service rather than curb-to-curb as required by law. But that service, as critically important as it is for people who utilize it, is substantially more expensive than our regular service. And so we are working very closely with Ride Connection, with Elders in Action, with others, to be able to find individuals who make use of that to see if there are times, at least for some of their trips, they can, in fact, make use of our fixed route service. It gives them more freedom and more control over their own schedule, but it also means that some of those costs can, in fact, be controlled to ensure that we can provide that service to the people who are have no other options. Lastly, let me mention that although we certainly do see the challenges of this economy, as does everyone else, it is a very important element of the economy and the economic development are the projects that we build, whether it's a light rail line that we're just completing right now, and we'll be opening in September, what we call the Green Line that comes along I-205 from Clackamas Town Center on up to Gateway and on the Transit Mall. On average, over the last 15 years, we have brought money, federal money, that is discretionarily divvied up, provided we have been able to achieve that federal discretionary money to the tune of about $80 million per year over each of those last 15 years. That's $80 million that would have gone to Atlanta or Denver or some other place, but instead have been able to come to this, to the greater Portland region and employ Oregonians. We think that's a very important task. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, and thank you for the time, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Shoffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for coming. And I'm a huge supporter of TriMet and what you're doing and the other mass transit systems around the state. And I have personally taken great advantage of your service. And my wife pays a business tax to help support you, and she's taken advantage of it. The MAX line is going to go within walking distance of her office soon. And so don't take this wrong, but I want that line in Estacada. I beg you, they're one community. I will support you no matter what decision you make, because these are hard times. But to cut that line off and cut the whole community off from this great service, I just hope you can find it somewhere and maintain service to that town. It's right close to my town. I love going out there. I did use that line for 3 years. I used that line, and I'm going to share it with the committee right now. When I moved to Portland, I lived at Northwest 17th and Everett, and I rode my bicycle early in the morning to the bus barn on Southeast 17th and Holgate. And I caught a not-in-service bus that rode me clear out to Southeast 130th and Highway 212. And it started its route in Estacada. And I got off that bus, and work started at Morris Brothers at 6 a.m. I never was late. I never missed a day of work. And I did that for 3 years. I'm telling you, this is a great service. And if that line weren't there, I would have been forced to go buy a car, which eventually I did, obviously. But, you know, it's really important, and that's just one example. And I'm not going to beat you up, but I hope you find a way to keep that service to that city. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Shoffler, I hear you loud and clear, as you mentioned that yesterday as well as we talked. We're going to be looking very hard. This is a little bit of I think as Senator Stennis once said, don't tax me, don't tax thee, tax the fellow over behind the tree. And in some ways, it's the same sort of issue. We've got tough times, but I hear you loud and clear.
Thank you, and I know you'll do your best.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Can you talk? One of the things I'm trying to get my head around is the specter of stimulus funds in the light rail system. I know that I have an East County line that is the oldest line in the system. It's been a boon to my community. As I've said before, I'm a user. I won't go into my pride of being a transit user, although I am very prideful of my TriMet.
Thank you.
But I would like to know if we're going to be able to get at some of the neglect. And I'm not blaming anybody. I know that the funds are hard and that oftentimes all funds are dedicated towards expanding service. But I'm wondering if the stimulus dollars are going to be available to kind of get at some of the maintenance things, to kind of get at and potentially, especially with the East Side Line, take some of the things that you all have learned from the newer developments about the way TriMet affects the community or the way light rail affects the community and can actually be a greater benefit and apply those things to the East Side Line. I'm doing this simply because if we're going to be talking about things that are dear to us and things that we'd like to see, I might as well throw mine onto the record too. So thank you for opening the floodgates, Representative Shoffler.
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Call, the answer is yes. We are, in fact, because of the nature of the federal stimulus package, there are certain dollars that flow to transit systems across the nation. We're very proud that we are have been chosen as one of the places to be able to put help put Oregonians back to work, and we are very proud of that. The TriMet Board of Directors this morning, in fact, just authorized essentially the application for those grant funds, as well as contracts that will allow us to be able to delegate or to actually construct. We do expect that in a number of places along the east side of the line, we will in fact be making improvements. At City Hall in Gresham, we will in fact be making changes to exactly how that that platform is. We're looking at painting of the different the poles and various other elements along it, and specifically within Rockwood at 188, we are expecting as well to be able to see stimulus dollars used to be able to really bring that project to fruition along with the Urban Renewal District that is there. So we are looking at utilizing the stimulus dollars to be able to repair fading or failing infrastructure, as well as to be able to make it necessary improvements, and we think that's very important. All of this is very tough against a time of dollars that aren't allocated for operating. In fact, my bus line, and it's interesting, I think, to note that we who use transit, you use the possessive of it's my or, you know, our line, it's the Estacada line, it's the MAX line, it's my number 17. We actually are cutting service on it as well. So we did not hold back.
Well, if you'd convey my thanks to the board for their continued interest in the east side line.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We feel a bit neglected sometimes.
Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one quick question, because I'd mentioned this with you in the office at one point. Have you looked at possibly raising fares with some of the riders and keeping the fares down for the seniors, disabled, and students, and then with the main riders who are taking it to and from work? Because I think right now monthly bus pass is around $80 or $90, where if they were having to buy insurance for their car or just pay for parking every day, it would be $12. So it's a substantial savings, and I think there's room for you to bring in more revenue just off of fare increase on your monthly passes and your daily passes. Because I know when I've put people on transit and everything, I've been blown away at how cheap it was to do it, and I think you have some room to increase fares, and I think that would probably be something that you could look at, so we can help out with some of these rural districts, because I don't want to see people with disabilities, seniors, students getting cuts to their routes and their bus lines, because those are the people that cannot get around and don't have the ability to drive that really need this service.
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, first off is that the our fares are pay for about just over 20%, 20.5% of our operating costs. That's about typical across the United States, maybe a little bit on the low side, but that's partly because we provide so much service that that other systems don't. Number two, on elderly and disabled, the federal law allows it to be able to be charged at double the cost of the regular fare. We are at about 90% of the regular fare. That is over half below what, in fact, would be permitted under federal law, because we do think that the elderly and disabled, honored citizens, as we term it in our lingo, do need a break. We likewise give students up to 18 years old also reductions. We have also looked at student pass programs and looking at how that can be utilized using Betsy, the business energy tax credit, and work with the Portland Public Schools. So a series of things we are addressing, but we do think that our fares overall, if you look nationwide, are a little bit above middle range, and we are at least at this stage in this economy reluctant to see the middle meaning all other fare payers, to be able to do too much more than they are today.
It could go on for a while if I follow up, so okay. I'll pass.
We'd be happy to sit down and talk further if you'd like.
Yeah, I would like to do that if you could swing by my office.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Good call. Thank you.
Yeah, could you... I'm sorry. I'd like to probe just, since we're on the subject, a little more deeply into what that 20% looks like. You're talking about 20% of the cost of providing all of your services. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so when you look at your LIFT program and how expensive that is, and then you look at your average rate payer and what they're paying for, someone like myself who's doesn't have a disability, walks to a MAC station, gets on, takes a transfer, doesn't use the LIFT service at all. If we sequestered those two services, if we separated them such that we could look at them discreetly, could you possibly explain to us what the average user of this pays for when they pay their fare and what the other portion of this is that's out there, the LIFT program, at least for TriMet? Could you talk about that?
Yes. This is almost more than you wanted to know because we analyze this every direction. way most systems look at it is the cost in terms of the cost side, and then I'll deal with the revenue side. But the cost side is we do it on a cost per boarding ride. This is a part of what the National Transit Database requires in terms of reporting and so on. If you think about it on the bus side, our cost per boarding ride, and that's the whole system, some obviously much more productive than others, but is exactly $2.76 per boarding ride. On the MAC side, and again, if you think about it, the costs for operating are driven principally by labor costs, and instead of having a one bus operator and 45 people on the bus MAC, you can have on the train one train operator and 330 people. That cost on the rail side is $1.55, even though there is additional capital cost. The comparable number for Lyft is $27.45. Now, if you look at, again...
Could you repeat that one more time? I'm sorry.
$27.45 for our that individualized door-to-door service. And again, understand, we, from our standpoint, this is for people who need it, this is the lifeline to provide it, and no complaint from my standpoint that we're doing it, but it is much more expensive. I can quickly do the math, tell you the difference on the revenue side. It's about 74 cents in terms of the average pay on the revenue side, on the bus side, 91 cents on the MAC system. And again, that's, we have zones, so it's distance-based, and that's part of the reason why you're seeing that difference. On the LIFT, it is $1.04 that is being paid. So that's the revenue side, the ticket side, against those cost side that I'd given you earlier. Again, that's just operating. It doesn't, you know, account for, obviously, the depreciation and capital costs and so on.
So it's safe to say that the greatest portion of subsidy, for lack of a better word, is actually going to seniors and people with disability who have no other means of transportation but for the service that you're providing.
Absolutely. We do say, and I would point out, that about 25% of the individuals who could take the fixed route but utilize the LIFT route, LIFTs, the ADA-like, are not able to get to a bus stop, or they could ride, but they can't get there because of lack of sidewalks or lack of safe crossings of streets. So it's more than just the service side, it's also that access side that, as transit riders, we know.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sir, would you mind if I just add to that, too?
Please.
Just one other thought is that we have about a million LIFT rides per year, but we have 100 million on the fixed route total rides, but 10% of those are elderly and disabled people who are riding fixed route as well. I just thought that was an interesting metric to
right.
share with you.
My guess is you'll hear the same from Eugene, maybe not the exact percentages, but that same sort of difference.
Representative Edwards?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering if you could talk a bit about WES, your newest experience or experiment in mass transit. As there's talk in the building already about potentially extending it to Salem or alternately west to Forest Grove, I'm wondering if you can give us a succinct list of kind of lessons learned and that might inform our discussions as we move forward this session.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Edwards. Lessons learned. One is, I think we all know that we had difficult birthing pains with the cars. The difficulty is that when you're going to be running on commuter rail, and this is heavy rail, this is a active freight train area, Portland Western, running freight trains, and wanting to run them with the possibility of running them at the same time, not the exact same time, but during that same open window, you have to meet several federal regulations. Number one is, is. It must, in fact, be what they call a crash-worthy vehicle, and that's obviously you don't want a very lightweight vehicle where there are going to be freight trains. Number two is, because this had federal participation in the capital construction, it also is required to buy America. In this case, at the time we were buying, and actually today still, there was only one manufacturer of that kind of a vehicle that we needed in the U.S., and as a result, there wasn't as much competition. In fact, we did have a bid when we were buying those cars from Siemens. They were not very interested in buying or building only the four cars we had, but if they could have gotten a contract with Transit Triangle in North Carolina, they would have. They ultimately dropped out, but even at that, their bid was more expensive than we ultimately paid for the vehicles. So one is, lesson learned, we need to be able to have more U.S. manufacturers of this type of vehicle. Oregon Ironworks is, in fact, exploring whether or not they may have been interested in that. They are doing the prototype on a streetcar, and we think that would be a very exciting prospect, but maybe other bidders as well or other potential interests. Number two is, I think it's very important that we find ways to be able to make sure that the freight side and the commuter side work well. For us, this is a first. Not only is it with commuter rail, but it is also the first time we're having a service that's really only in the rush hour and only 5 days a week. We oftentimes find, particularly on our MAX and more on our bus side, that people are using it all hours of the day, into the evenings, and on Saturdays and Sundays. The restrictions are such that I think we'd want to make sure, as we talked about it in the rest of the state or other parts of the state, how do we really want to be able to balance that hours of service and when it really fits.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Very interesting conversation and very much appreciate your presentation. Again, I've heard these several times over the last month or so, and I've learned a lot each time, so I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
The question I have is this. You said, I think earlier, that there's going to be a 5%, you're doing a 5% across-the-board cut.
Yes.
That you mentioned. And at what point will you be deciding that you can't cut anymore and you have to actually raise fares? Is that on your horizon? And if so, what is the authority that you enjoy that will allow you to do that? Or do you have to come back here and ask?
Madam Chair, Representative Benz, you know, because you ride the red line in from the airport and have made use of the system, how important that service is. We, on the fare side, on the service side, what we are doing is have made essentially a 5% cut across the board, but because of being able to utilize a special category of stimulus funds, we're able to offset about half of that on the actual service side. The rest of the agency is at 5%. If we have to make additional cuts, we have indicated that we are keeping open the option of a fare increase, but we think this is the economy not to be able to do that in unless it's the last resort. From a standpoint of authority, the TriMet Board of Directors has that authority without any additional authority needing to be granted. My guess is you'll hear that from all the other transit properties as well. But we just think that in this economy, it's tough to be able to think about raising a fare.
If you decide to take that unfortunate step of raising the fare, how much time do you need? Is it immediate?
The lead time, because we have to go through an adoption process and then we have to print everything and for the information and so on, it's about a three-month process to be able to do it and to be able to get out all the word. For us, a 5-cent fare increase is about $1.7 million in increased revenue. That offsets then, of course, the need to be able to cut service. And that's always the toughest of the dilemma. Do you cut service where people don't have any choice, or do you, in fact, raise fare and make the pain be a bit, but across the whole? That's going to be a very tough one for us.
Thank you.
Representative Call.
Sorry, one last question, Madam Chair. Just to follow up on one of Representative Edwards' line of questions, and you can get to me offline if this isn't readily available, but I'm wondering if also in your forays into WES, if you've done the kind of cost-benefit analysis between rehabilitating Freightline and actually laying your own tracks and really taking into account all of the costs that have gone into that. I know that there are opportunity costs that are foregone. You guys are a second class citizen on those rails, and all sorts of things that are out there. And I'm wondering, whether you guys have given some thought to this, and if there's any right of way out there that we own publicly that is usable. I notice every day driving down the 5 that there seems to be a big expanse of land between the southbound and northbound stretches of that interstate. I oftentimes find myself thinking that wouldn't it be lovely if there was a commuter train right down the middle of that highway moving past all of those cars stuck in gridlock. So maybe you can comment on that.
We'll, Madam Chair and Representative Call, we'll get back to you with more detail, but just a very brief answer is, and maybe this is a third lesson learned in response to Representative Edwards, and that is having lots of other players involved in whatever it is you're trying to construct makes it a much more challenging. We oftentimes refer to the commuter rail as having more headaches per mile than any of our other projects. It is significant to be able to have dedicated right-of-way, to be able to have for example, our MAX lines, and we are, in fact, the sole utilizer of that, and as a result, the ability to be able to add capacity, extra trains when we need them, to be able to have time when we need to be able to do the maintenance work in roughly the 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. slot because it's the only time we're not running trains. Those sorts of things gives us a lot more flexibility. If, however, we're going to make use of existing freight track that is maybe underutilized, then you got to take on those other burdens, and then it becomes a balancing act of how to be able to do it. But I think in our view, obviously a lot of the operational issues are much more straightforward when we have owned the right-of-way.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you for coming. Next, I have Julie Wilkie, Leslie Garth, and Evelyn Riggs with Ride Connection. And welcome.
Or good afternoon. Chair Beyer and members of the House Transportation Committee, good afternoon. My name is Julie Wilkie with Ride Connection, and Evelyn Riggs is to my right. Leslie Garth was not able to attend. She's out driving today. Before I begin, I would really like everyone on the committee to imagine with me what it would be like if you were no longer able to leave your home. Your keys are gone. You're not able to ride your bicycle. You're no longer mobile. The isolation, the disconnect, the not knowing how you're going to go grocery shopping, get to work, pick up medical prescriptions, or be an active member of the community. What would you do and how would you get around? For our neighbors and older adults, people with disabilities, this is what some of them face 365 days a year. How to get where they need to go to be independent and to ensure that basic needs are being met. Ride Connection is a 20-year nonprofit organization that coordinates transportation services for older adults and people with disabilities in the Tri-County area. Our mission is to link accessible, responsive transportation with community need, and we really are supported and collaborate with TriMet to ensure that older adults and people with disabilities in the Portland metropolitan area are served. So how do we do that? We complement TriMet services. We work outside the TriMet service district in some rural communities like Banks, Gaston, out in Corbett, and in the outerlying areas, Estacada. We really work with them to ensure that we're creating the most cost-effective measures. Since 2001, Mr. Hansen mentioned their productivity improvement project, we have been working with them to ensure that every dollar is used in an efficient manner since about 2001. And that's really when we started the talks and implemented our travel training program shortly after that. TriMet and Ride Connections partnership is a unique blend of public and private entities working together for a common goal. We commend all that TriMet does for our citizens and thank them profusely for their continued support and commitment to serving older adults and people with disabilities. In the packet that you have received gives a much more detailed description of how Ride Connections serves our community. I will just say that we serve both urban areas of Portland as well as rural communities like Banks, Corbett, and Eagle Creek. And our last fiscal year, we provided over 371,000 rides to shop for shopping, medical appointments, life-sustaining medical like chemo or dialysis treatment, as well as providing activities so that our community members could become and stay active citizens. Our continuum of accessible services really includes one point of entry for easy access for our community members. It includes our travel training program, as well as working with over 30-plus community transportation providers that do the direct service in our community. Those community transportation providers provide door-to-door service, as well as community shuttles, grocery shopping. They share their vehicles. We have a retired vehicle program. And really, by offering our customers a variety of options, Ride Connection provides older adults and people with disability transportation options that suit their ability level. Our ridership is, you have some information on our ridership for last fiscal year, and as far as in the first two quarters of this fiscal year, we're at just under 200,000, so we're seeing an increase in ridership for this fiscal year. Of our 30 community transportation providers, our rides are provided by not only 552 drivers, but two-thirds of those are volunteer drivers. So that also increases our fleet of vehicles because some of our volunteers are providing transportation in their own private auto. As far as the funding, if you refer to the last page of your handout, that gives a description of our revenue and where our funds come from. With about a $5.4 million budget, that just is what's included in this chart that's on the last page of your handout. I did want to make mention that in addition to that, our partner agencies contribute to the overall revenue that's available for transportation in our region. Of our 30 community transportation providers last fiscal year, they contributed about $1.6 million in those 371,000 rides being produced, and about 82,000 of that is donation. Our services, there's no charge for our services, though donations are gladly accepted. I wanted to mention that we feel that we are doing everything that we possibly can to be as efficient as possible. Our cost per ride, and this really includes the door-to-door service as well as our community shuttles, is about $11.94 a ride. We have consolidated common oversight tasks like our driver approval process and training, vehicle acquisition, as well as oversight, just to name a few. We are creating efficiencies by asking our service partners to join our coordinated scheduling system so that we can really gain some economies of scale. We also have developed quality mechanisms to ensure accurate reporting and easy reporting of the information that we need for our funders, as well as we're creating new and innovative partnerships all the time to really capture our capacity needs. So one example is that we've recently developed a partnership with the American Cancer Society. They really wanted to begin their Road to Recovery program in Portland, but why set up a separate, isolated, standalone service. So we really worked with them to ensure that they're part of the network, which overall reduces costs and increases capacity. We have a great initial evaluation process that really guides consumers to the most appropriate mode of transportation available. We group as many trips as possible and encourage sharing. As far as our challenges, we really have seen an increase in our requests for transportation. Our customers' needs are growing faster than our capacity can currently serve. So if we look at our turndowns, which is one way to really view the unmet need, last fiscal year our turndowns were about 9,700 for the entire year. In the first two quarters of this year, we're already at 9,600 turndowns. So that is, again, just a small picture of people that have called in and requested a ride that know about our service, and we were unable to meet their needs. Our funding is declining, and I just want to, if we're going back to the chart and where our revenue comes from, we're seeing declining funds in many areas. Foundations have less dollars to give. They're primarily usually project-based programs, and historically, they don't fund ongoing operation. Our Medicaid non-medical transportation is being affected. That's going to affect about 4,000 clients in the Portland metropolitan area. And that really will decrease their options for transportation through the non-medical Medicaid. OPI has a potential of being cut, and that is going to affect about 1,500 clients in their transportation needs, as well as our county and city funds are going down. We support in making sure that we use every dollar efficiently. We ask for your support in creating options for us to be able to meet the needs of our community members. I would like to, if I can, have Evelyn speak to our Ride Connection service, and then if you have any questions for either of us at the end, we can do that. So thank you very much for your time. And Evelyn, would you like to share?
Yes, I would. First, I'll tell you that I'm 91 years old, sure. Mm-hmm. And if...
I don't know if you can get any closer to that mic.
Probably. And I go to the senior center 5 days a week, and I register our guests as they come in, and kind of oversee the dining room that everything's done like supposed to be. And if I didn't have Ride Connection, I'd be staring at four walls every day at home. And really, it's wonderful. Just being there at the senior center, we have between 75 and 100 guests every day. And they seem very happy with us, and we are with them. Thank you for allowing me to come.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming. So, do we have any questions? Representative Berger.
I'd like to ask our guests. At the senior center, are a lot of the guests also come by public transit?
Oh, yes.
Very high percentage?
A large percentage of them do. I would say over half.
Thank you for coming. Yours is a very compelling story.
Thank you.
Representative Shoffler.
You know, Madam Chair, thank you. As I listened to Evelyn talk, I wonder how much this benefits all you and all those folks' health, rather than just sitting there, because we're stuck in this room for all day. And I know it ain't good for our health. But
get out and move around.
Yes, ma'am, we can. I'm grateful for that.
Yes.
I just wonder, though, I'll bet you, and I'm not a doctor or researcher, but I'll bet you that it does have a dramatic positive impact on people's health getting out and about.
I suffered two heart attacks a couple years ago, and my doctor says that my going there, he wishes his father would do the same.
Yeah, right.
That was very beneficial to my recovery.
Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, I really appreciate your coming today.
Thank you very much.
And next I have Ed Necker and Steph Vigiano. They're from Lane Transit District today.
I can do it. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ed Necker, and I'm from Eugene. I'm on the Lane Transit District Board of Directors. Now, our paratransit service is RideSource, and I rode it for several years and volunteered there for 5.5 years. But I've been riding the fixed route for 10 years now, so I'm qualified to comment on it. Now, let me get down to a few specifics before I even go into the general fares. Our board has a policy that we have three fare instruments. We used to have three fare instruments, the cash fare, the pass, and the token. It used to be the policy of the board that only one fare instrument would be raised each year. That way a person had a choice. Times have been so hard that this year we eliminated the tokens and raised both the cash fare and the pass price. We are now, in our system, the fares only amount to about 15% of the cost also, so the bulk of the cost of the revenue comes from payroll taxes. Now, I don't have to explain to you what's happened to payroll taxes with all the layoffs. So our revenue is decreasing. Now the fixed route, the paratransit that we provide, RideSource, is also very expensive. It's federally mandated, but not federally funded. We get 2 cents a pack on cigarette tax, or 2.5 cents a pack. I'm not sure anymore. I'm much all to support Representative Byard's bill to raise it. That's an aside. And we have a Representative Cole. We have a program that it's called the Transit Host Program for people that are able to ride the bus but unable to make their connections because of physical or cognitive disabilities. We have a transit host program whereby there are always people at the station who have a schedule. They meet people, take them to their next bus. It transfers a lot of the riders from RideSource to the fixed route, thereby reducing the cost. Now, I don't know if I can ask you guys to identify a revenue source for us. The stimulus is one-time revenue. It's given us the revenue for a couple of capital projects, but not for operations. We need some sort of revenue source. Now, if it was a general fund, we'd be fighting for it every time. So, that's about all I have to say. Are there any questions? If not, I'll turn it over.
Thank you, Ed, for pointing out that by losing jobs because of the economy going down, then the payroll taxes go down, then the revenues go down, and then that effect. I mean, there's a lot of effects from just one activity.
Yeah, and we considered adding a property tax revenue source, but times were so hard and the election, because we thought there would be a lot of participation in this last election because President Obama had quite a bit of support out there, but we let it drop because we couldn't do the education piece in the time that there was, and there were already two or three property tax demanders on the ballot.
Thank you. So, do you have any more to add? Or
yes, thank you, Chair Byer, and members of the committee. Thank you very much for this opportunity to testify. My name is Stefano Vigiano. I'm the Assistant General Manager for Lane Transit District. And I've been with LTD over 28 years, so I've seen much of the district's history or participated in it. We often compare ourselves to other transit districts of about our size, and what we find is that we have a very high level of ridership and high level of service compared to most transit districts around the country that are the size of the Eugene-Springfield area community towns. But over the last few years, we've just seen an amazing change in our ridership. In 2008, our ridership increased by 17% compared to the previous year. And compared to 3 years before, we're up about 35%. Just an unprecedented level of ridership. More and more people in the community are using our service to get to work, to get to school, to get to shopping, medical appointments. And as was mentioned for TriMet, a large percentage of our riders are choice riders. We do surveys and determine whether people had an option. For our system, it's about 50%, which is a very high level for a community the size of Eugene-Springfield. So about half of our riders actually did have a car available should they have chosen to use that. In this situation, and we have overloads on several of our routes and we're leaving people behind, it's a situation that's primed to add service and take advantage of this really increased demand for transit. Instead, what we are faced with, because of a number of factors, Ed mentioned the payroll tax impact, we were looking at a situation where our board actually went through a process and identified a 14.5% service cut. So it's sort of the perfect storm. In our situation, it was reduced payroll taxes, it was elderly and disabled transportation funding taking an increasing share of our general fund revenue, money that could have gone to fixed route service. And fuel prices, even though they're down now, are very volatile, and as we project out into the future, I don't think anyone expects they're going to stay at about the level they are. They will be increasing. Fortunately, we have been able to identify some one-time sources of revenue that will get us through maybe the next year or two without the dramatic service reduction that we had thought was necessary just a few months ago. The stimulus package is one. We've been able to use some of the stimulus package for, even though it's capital money, it's an allowable capital expense that offsets an operating cost for us. We've also been very creative in looking at other funding sources, trying to identify one-time funding needs. But as we project out beyond a year or two, it is clear that we need additional ongoing revenue in order to maintain our service. And again, with the growing community and growing ridership, ideally we'd like to be able to expand our service. So we strongly support the Governor's Jobs and Transportation Act. There is important transit funding in that act. We strongly support Representative Byer's bill for increased funding for elderly and disabled transportation. And we see sort of that as the next step for us. We've managed to put together a year or two's worth of funding in order to avoid service reductions, but that will not, we cannot continue that, our current level of service, without that additional funding. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Any questions? I guess we all got questioned out on the first round, so I appreciate your coming today. It's great to have you here again.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. And next I have Alan Pollock and Julie Brown, if you'll come up together.
Good afternoon, yes. Chair Byer, members of the committee. I'm Alan Pollock, the General Manager of Salem-Keizer Transit, or commonly known locally as Chariots. The services provided by Salem-Keizer Transit include our Chariots fixed route public transportation service, our Chairlift, which is our complimentary ADA paratransit service, a rideshare program for the region, as well as some specialized transportation services, specifically rural public transportation in Marion and Polk County, a Medicaid brokerage, and a travel training program. I'm just going to focus a couple of minutes on our Chariot service. In 2006, as a result of reduced funding, we cut service. This past month, we again cut service after an unsuccessful attempt at an operating levy at the November ballot. We did have to balance our budget. So with the cuts we made last month, and I'll talk more about that in a minute, and a little bit more we'll be making this summer, since 2006, we'll have cut 27% of our service to the community. The critical cut that we just made was the elimination of Saturday service. Prior to last month, we operated Monday through Saturday. And then in 2006, when we cut service, what we did there was reduce frequency on weekday routes and a little bit of reduced frequency on Saturday, but we didn't eliminate any days of the service. And what that did, though, was in our paratransit side of the house, we did keep that at the full level because that's complementary to the time of day and the routes. You can't reduce that with reduced frequency. But when we went into this budget year, we went in with a deficit with the utilizing some of our reserves to balance the budget to get us through to the ballot measure. But when that was unsuccessful, we did need to balance our fiscal year budget, and the amount was so great that we couldn't just reduce frequency anymore. Many of our routes were already at hourly service after the 2006 cuts, and you just can't cut frequency anymore. And that resulted in a decision to eliminate our weekend service, which also included our ADA service on Saturdays also. Because of that cut service, which since 2006 to 2008 was 22%, we did see an increase in our passengers per hour of 12%, and that was to be expected because there's less buses out on the street and more people are now on the fewer buses, which results in overcrowding, and we see a lot of overcrowding on our buses, especially during peak travel times. But it also tells us that we did not lose a proportionate amount of riders just because we cut service. We do have a high percentage of transit-dependent riders in this community, and they didn't have a choice. They had to adjust their lifestyle to meet our schedule, which is a very difficult thing for many people to do. For the last 6 years, we've been able to maintain a ridership over 5 million passengers per year, although as you can see in the handout, we did have a drastic reduction in 2007. That was the first full year of the cuts that went into effect, and you can see this past year, it's creeping up a little bit, and that is indicative of the need for transit in the community. Unlike TriMet and Lane Transit District, whose primary local funding source is the payroll tax, ours is a property tax, and we have raised our fares this past summer. Our board has a policy to review fares every other year, and this past summer we raised our fares, and we have seen a slight increase in our fare box recovery ratio since that fare increase, which is helping to maintain our costs and showing that the rider is paying a little bit more for their ride. Now I'd like to switch to our Cherrylift service, our paratransit service, and you can also see on the head our ridership. Our ridership continues to increase year over year on that service, and the cost of running that service in the last 5 years has increased by 131%, and that's through a combination of that increased ridership as well as the increased cost of that service. You've heard discussion earlier about why that is, but it's a much needed and valuable service, but very expensive when you compare it to the fixed route service. And then I'd just like to close with our rural public transportation services, which we administer but do not operate for the rural Marion and Polk County, connects 16 rural cities with each other and with Salem with fixed route and deviated fixed route service Monday through Friday. The attachment shows the revenue source breakdown for each of those programs. And in closing, that while we have reduced our service by 27% since 2006, which includes the loss of weekend service, the district has diligently reduced costs and improved efficiencies so that we could keep as much on-street service as possible, even though we were looking at cuts. So with that, it's critical that the district obtains a new sustainable, and the keyword there, sustainable additional revenue revenue source. The Jobs and Transportation Act and the increased transportation for funding for seniors and people with disabilities will help us achieve that goal. And with that, I'll conclude my comments, and I can answer questions now, or Julie can speak, and we could answer as a group.
Representative Berger.
Madam Chair, I have to take this opportunity. You know, it's nice to sit up here and brag about the services in your community, and Alan has done an excellent job with wonderful staff. But the fact of the matter is, I have not been pleased with the support that the voters have given to our transit district. We need these services, and he is telling a story that's pretty appalling, and it's going to come back and bite us because a lot of people need to get around in this community. So I'm with him, and we need to be looking as a community seriously at what we're cutting here.
Representative Hall.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Just briefly, I know that this isn't a hearing on the tobacco tax proposal, but since it's come up a few times before, I'm wondering to what extent some of the proposals that are out there now would allow you to buy back some of your service cuts should we choose to increase the tobacco tax and therefore further subsidize the services to disabled and seniors.
Chair Beyer, Representative Call. Currently, this year's budget for our cherry lift, our ADA service, is approximately 20% of our budget. Back in 2001, it was 4%. So that means a shift of funds from our fixed route service to that service. Any increase in the cigarette tax that flows back to the district will allow us to then replace that general fund contribution, which will allow us to maintain levels of fixed route service, which also provides service for elderly and disabled.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I usually only take public transit when I'm coming or going from a trip somewhere and then when I'm away. And last week, my intern took my car keys down to Eugene when he left. So I was able, though, to get online at night and find in one very easy-to-use website, by the way, too. The bus stop was just around the corner from where I stay, and I made it in time to get a cup of coffee here. It was very good to have that service. Thank you.
All right, you're welcome.
Representative Shoffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure I understand this chart, because on another hearing we had, I think it was the Transit Association, talked about how because of the lack of support from the voters that there were days shut off, I think Saturday and Sunday and some other things. Is the result of that reflected in this decline in ridership? Is that part of that?
Yes, Chair Beyer, Representative Shoffler, that is the first full year, that's reflected the first full year of our service cuts that went into effect in 2006. We reduced service by approximately 17%.
Well, Madam Chair, if I may then you have, several hundred thousand rides that aren't being provided. Somebody's not making it to work on a bus anymore.
That is correct.
Thank you. Any other? Seeing none. Thank you so much.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to come and speak about the Rogue Valley Transportation District. For those of you that don't know where RVTD is located, we're in Medford, which is the bottom half of the state, the opposite of TriMet. We were formed as a district back in 1975 and have been providing service for 34 years to the Southern Oregon area. In 2006, our district had to cut services. We cut 35% of our services in order to provide services under the ADA. So, like Salem and everybody else, we also are experiencing a situation where the ADA service has impacted us tremendously. I want to talk a little bit about our district. We all are a small urban rural area, so we receive federal funds to provide transportation along with the STF, or the Special Transportation Funds, from the state of Oregon. We provide services for seven cities in our area. And in addition to this, I want to talk about a program that we also provide. We made a decision to try to coordinate transportation in the southern area of Oregon. And so we provide the Medicaid transportation through a brokerage for seven counties. We provide Medicaid transportation in Lake, Klamath, Coos Coulee, Jackson, Josephine, Douglas counties. And so that is a large area of transportation. In addition to this, we have our fixed route service and our ADA service. And I want to talk a little bit about, we provided 1.2 million rides just on our ADA and fixed route service alone last year. And under the Medicaid service, we provided an additional 196,000 rides. In addition to that, the Medicaid brokerage provided, 196,000 rides in that seven-county area. One of the things that I wanted to point out to the committee is a big fear for us is providing transportation for elderly and disabled through the Medicaid transportation brokerage is a great opportunity for our district, and not only our district, but the small rural transportation districts throughout those seven counties. By having contracts with these different transportation providers, we're able to help sustain their ability to provide elderly and disabled transportation in their community. If the Medicaid transportation portion of the Department of Human Services budget went away, those services would then fall on the transit providers. So you're looking at an increase of 196,000 rides in a seven-county area that would then be shifted to ADA or elderly and disabled services. With that said, all of us receive the STF or the cigarette tax dollars. In our county alone this year, we're taking a 3.5% decrease in funding, along with, over the last 2 years, a 9% decrease. So as the ID cards, purchases go down along with the cigarette tax and the lawnmower funds, we are seeing a decrease in being able to provide transportation beyond our ADA services. RVTD has a commitment to provide the ADA services, and what we do is we cut our fixed route service in order to provide that service. But when you go on beyond that and you start looking in your rural areas and you start talking about transportation, and we're talking about life-sustaining transportation to senior centers, to doctor's appointments, to things that just to get your groceries, it's a real concern not only for us but for our seven counties that we serve. One of the things that I think, Representative Widener, you brought up was the fare box revenue and fares. One of the things that the Rogue Valley Transportation District did in 2006 is we doubled our fare. So it went from $1 to ride the bus to $2. What that did to our ADA service was it made $4 a cost a trip for somebody who's elderly and disabled. Because of the statute and the way that the mandate is with the ADA, when you start shifting your fixed route cost, it makes an impact. What happened was we saw a reduction of 50% of our rides in our ADA services. Now, this was a help as far as cutting costs, but we're talking about 50% of the rides that elderly and disabled people were taking, they no longer were taking. What happened was we saw a shift to our low-floored buses, which we had just purchased, and people started using the fixed route a little bit more. But I have a concern about that because the reason they're doing it is because of their economic situation. I've seen people that are in wheelchairs going down the street 2 miles to a bus stop in order to use the fixed route service versus using our ADA service, because on our fixed route service, we allow them to ride free for part of their trip. So when you have these cost shiftings, these kind of things happen. I just want to encourage you. I don't have an answer as to what we need to do. When the trolley services and bus services were disbanded back in the days and before my time, it was a disservice because now we became a car-dependent society. But what we are seeing is because of the economic situation, we're seeing a shift to the public transit. And right now, RVTD is setting a 13% increase on our fixed route buses. There are three bills out there that will impact the future of RVTD. Of course, House Bill 2120, 2122, and 2379. Any of those bills will help our district. If it's a cigarette tax and the elderly disabled, like Alan says, it takes away the burden on the general budget. But there is in the governor's bill an option to allow transportation districts that were formed under a certain ordinance, along with a mass transit district like Salem, to be able to levy the payroll tax without a vote of the people. And that is one of the things that we are looking for. When I took the job as general manager a year and a half ago, our Chamber of Commerce challenged me, along with Representative Richardson, to run our district as a business. And we have taken that on as a model. And because of that, we are now seeing a support from our chamber that we've never seen before. They've gotten on board and helped us draft a plan for the payroll tax, and if this bill doesn't pass, we will be looking at going to our local constituents to ask for that. I urge you to consider these things because it will make transportation in Southern Oregon a lot better. Thank you.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to show my ignorance here, which I think sometimes good and refreshing.
For a change?
Yeah. Hey, wait, now, wait a minute. Maybe for a change for the building. Certainly not for me. The payroll tax, that's what we have in TriMet. And what we would be doing is allowing other transit districts to do the same that currently can't.
Under our ordinance now, we are allowed to use the payroll tax, but we have to go to the vote of the people each time we want to implement either the initial implementation of the tax or an increase in the tax. TriMet does not have to do that. The board of directors makes that decision.
And Madam Chair, if I may. So then we would just be preempting everyone's ordinance. Is that correct? How's this?
It would be amending the ordinance. So what it does is it no longer makes us go to the vote of the people each time. It allows us to implement it through our board of directors, like TriMet and Lane Transit.
I'm trying to get to the bottom of this. So there's a statute currently prohibiting your transit district from amending their own ordinance to get rid of the vote of the people. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Widener.
Just to clear things for the record, Mrs. Brown, what I was saying, it's the people who are able to walk to the bus stop that are taking it to and from work that I was insinuating to TriMet that maybe we raise the fares a quarter, 50 cents, somewhere on that line, so we make sure we fund the disabled services that are out there, because the door-to-door service is who we need to take care of. And that's who I'm first and foremost wanting to see that we cover and we take care of their needs. So I just wanted to clear that up for the record, because they're in a situation where they can't get out and do for themselves. They're not working. They're not using it to go to and from work. So we're providing a great service for people that are using this to and from work that's saving them a lot of money from parking, gas, insurance, things like that. And it's shifting those funds over to the ADA services is what I'd like to see, and make sure we take care of ADA services first and foremost.
I just have a quick question.
Yes.
What is the lawnmower tax? You said lawnmower?
Yeah.
I heard one thing wrong today, not in this committee, and it got me in trouble, but I think I heard lawnmower.
Okay. Yes. Madam Chair and Representative Boone, the lawnmower tax is the gasoline tax that is collected when you purchase gas for the lawnmower, and it's put into a fund.
For uses that are off-highway, there's a fund that they've dedicated.
Okay.
Any other questions, anyone? Well, I guess I just want to have a comment and in response to Representative Widener's last comment, and that is that we are funding those special needs services, and we're funding them on the backs of our fixed route services. And we don't have any choice. The only way we can't pay, that we can get rid of paying for those special needs is if we cut routes and we don't run routes on those, and then we don't have to provide that service for people on those routes. But right now, the fixed route system is paying, and whether or not it's an increase or not, they are paying for that. So. Thank you. My soapbox.
Chair's prerogative.
Yes. Matt Mumford, and then I have Mary Jo Carpenter and Leslie Lewis, if you guys would like to come up.
And, Madam Chair, you have to be very nice to my constituent, Mr. Mumford.
Wait, which one's your constituent, Representative Boone?
And the same would go for my constituents, your Joel. So.
Yes.
That just leaves one you can be mean to.
That's right. Yes. Former representative.
Should I stand up for you, Leslie?
And now County Commissioner Leslie Lewis. So, I had Matt Mumford down here first, so we can start with you.
Thank you, Representative Beyer, and other representatives, especially Ms. Boone. It's great to be here today to talk with you. Tillamook is, we're one of the new kids on the block. We started in 96 as a experiment by ODOT, and then became a district in 97. Our first year, we had 6,000 passengers. This last year, we carried 75,000. We're looking to carry about 85,000. Doesn't seem like much compared to TriMet, but when you think the county is only 25,000, we gave everybody a ride three times. You know, you heard a lot today about different things, and I'll tell you, we're in a little different situation because we have a property tax that helps us to, you know, $1 for property tax for every $4 state and federal. That's a great thing for us, but I'll tell you, and we use a dial-a-ride system for our paratransit arm, and that's unfunded except for the STF money that comes in from the cigarette tax. We're going to get about $42,000 this year, and we give about half of that to the Marie Mills Center, which is another provider in our area. And so when you look at that, that means it cost us anywhere from 8 to 10 times that amount. And we have volunteer drivers as well that save us another $100,000 because they operate in North and South County. So this funding is important for us, and I think someone pointed out to me that, you know, 10 years ago or 12 years ago, there wasn't very much public transportation on the coast anyway. And now we're connected up with Sunset Empire. We actually go into Cannon Beach. They come down to Manzanita. We hope to hook up with Lincoln County this fall. So you'll actually be able to get a ride from Tillamook and go all the way. You can go right now. You can go all the way up to Longview, Washington. And then hopefully you'll be able to go all the way down to Newport and hook up with other guys. We're also sharing our monthly passes. So if you have a monthly pass on the Sunset Empire, which is Astoria, you can ride our system as well, and vice versa. So it's really a good deal. We haven't raised fares because we have a large elderly population. So we've kept ours at $1, although we have fare zones that go back and forth. And I don't know if anybody really talked about it, but, you know, when you raise fares, there's kind of an involuntary loss. As you can imagine, with public transit, you raise your fares, and all of a sudden, you raise them 5%, well, you lose 5% of your ridership. And, you know, ridership is everything for us. Let's see. What else did I want to just to share with you briefly? We have 9 buses and 5 vans and a pickup that we use for maintenance. We also, if you remember, we were one of the first Connect Oregon. We got one of the grants for the transit center, and you probably heard we had some difficulties with that. Had to go out and rebid it 3 times and actually got it to come in under budget and very appropriate for the size facility, and everyone's been very happy with that. And it's been a great boon, and I'd like to see those things continue. Does anybody have any questions, or do you want to let the others talk first, and we'll answer as a group?
We have time, so don't see any right yet. So.
Madam Chair and members of the House Transportation Committee, thank you for having me here to testify and inviting us to testify. My materials aren't really that. The short story is I was here on Monday, and we decided for a meeting, and I decided that it was important that I stay and testify, so I stayed over 2 extra days to come here. And so I did actually add to your economy here, since I only brought clothes for one day. I've been very busy while I've been over here, I'm sorry to say, and I won't say that to Baker County. So. And also I would thank Representative Bentz, who's been very helpful to us in our area. So I'm glad to be here. My name, for the record, is Mary Jo Carpenter. I am in Baker City. I live with Community Connection of Northeast Oregon.
We are a private nonprofit provider, and actually our mission is social service. We're the Area Agency on Aging, Community Action Agency, Housing and CHOTO, Community Housing and Development Organization, and a transportation provider. We operate in Baker, Union, Wallowa counties. We also operate some programs in Grant County, and we work in partnership with our other local counties. So we're quite broad in our funding dispersion and the different funding sources that we have. And our agency has been around since 1969, which I think that attributes to part of that longevity of our private nonprofit, and we're doing well. I have been with Community Connection for over 20 years. And so when I began there, we were the senior bus, you know, the one that runs around a few hours a day and takes the seniors to the doctor's offices, and which was a great service to have at that time, and we provided a lot of those services. And that's pretty much what we were operating in all three counties. Now, our third county, which is Wallowa County, they're a smaller population, although their area is quite large. They're in size, I think, the biggest county. So they actually run only a few days a week at that time. So if you think about in terms of transportation as spectrum, I'm thinking TriMet is kind of like at one end, and we are the very rural provider. Our population is nearly frontier. It's very, very sparse. So what we are serving in our areas are small hub communities of 10 to 15,000. And in particular, Baker County, our other small communities are, you know, less than 500 population and 25 to 50 miles out from the hub. And they are elderly communities. The city of Richland in Baker County has the oldest median age in the state at 16, in the 60s. And something you may have seen which kind of demonstrates that is there was a video done, a documentary video, that it was about special elderly and disabled transportation. Our system in Baker County was the first one featured on that video. And the scene from that video that sticks in my mind is the cutaway van going down this lonely highway all by itself with oodles of countryside around it. And if you remember, that is Baker County, and that's where we are. So since that time, we've grown from the senior bus. In the 1980s, we accessed general public transportation, and we have really tried to identify needs in our area and grow the service and better serve the people. We're still primarily running Monday through Friday. We have developed some Saturday service in Union County. I've put on Sunday service in Baker County. That was the feedback we got to get folks to church. And a lot of these folks are persons who use mobility devices who had no other way to get to church. So we're really serving this. Those are really kind of our special transportation times. But we have grown our general public transportation greatly. You do have a chart here in front of you, not a fancy one, but it gives you the numbers. It shows actually our ridership numbers for the last 15 years. And you can see that, I'll speak to Baker County because that's what I'm most familiar with, that we've grown our ridership from, in 1994, from 14,000 rides a year to 28,000 rides a year. And our agency as a whole has gone from 35,000 rides a year to over 100,000 rides a year. Much of that growth came in 2006 when we instituted a fixed route service in La Grande. Now, it's not normal to have fixed route service in a community under, I think the planners will usually tell you they just don't work in towns under 15 or 20,000. For some reason, they work in La Grande. It has a college in the community, and it's got a Walmart. So, it's our regional Walmart.
We're jealous.
So, I know,
we knew we were the city when we got Walmart around.
So anyway, Scott, and they've had great success with that. You can see that the ridership numbers really jumped in 2006. And the interesting numbers are, although the total numbers grew by over 40%, the senior and disabled part grew by over 30%. So that told you that there were a lot more senior and persons with disability rides being provided on the fixed route than really what we ever anticipated, which we were pleased about. We are anticipating starting a fixed route in Baker as well, because the fact that the numbers that you're seeing here, I mean, we're at capacity in terms of time. We are turning away rides, and every time we have added drivers on to the extent that our funding will allow, and we don't know if we can maintain that level of hours of drivers, because essentially when, you know, we translate when we receive funding, that turns into driver hours. And how many drivers can you get on the road? Because we run pretty strictly the dial-a-ride service. So if we can maintain that level of service, we will still be not able to meet the need that is coming around in Baker. And we're hoping that by instituting the fixed route, we can absorb more ridership and then still be able to operate the fixed route. Am I running out of time? Okay. So anyway, the basic services are that we run the dial-a-ride service, we run some fixed route, and the intercity connections have been another new service that we were able to do because we wrote grants to public transit on the inner city side. It was identified that they needed workers at the new Cayuse Technologies in Pendleton area, and they had workers in LeGrand. So they're running three buses a day over to the Umatilla Tribes area. Those buses are full. They're providing workers and reliable transportation. And even through this nasty winter, I think they only were unable to go one day. This year, we started a service between Baker City and LeGrand, and we run through two small communities that have no public transportation whatsoever, including Greyhound. So our service allows them to access Greyhound and also for people in Baker to access medical services in LeGrand, where they bring in some of the specialists more than they do here. Other than that, people in our area have to travel 120 miles to Boise or 120 miles to Walla Walla to access any kind of special. We did a coordinated planning effort in our three counties. We drew Department of Human Services, education, health care providers. We came up with a coordinated plan to identify gaps in service. As a result of that, we came up with a fixed route in Baker and LeGrand, the regional connectors, and we identified the fact that we need facilities to protect our capital purchases. For years and years in Wallowa County, they've been parking their buses there out in the parking lot, and it does snow in Wallowa County, you know. So that we need those sorts of facilities, so we're participating in the stimulus to get that access to facilities and capital projects. To continue the success at providing these services, we need to do the continued funding. And since I'm here, and I know we're not talking about cigarette tax, but I have to pitch it that I was here, many years ago, the last time we talked about, increasing the tax, because it had been so long, and it's again been 10 years since this has been addressed. And this money is, the STF money is really the basis of us, of our services in the rural areas. Our riders tend to be riders of necessity rather than riders of choice because it's a small place. We don't have the congestion. We don't have, whatever reasons people take public transit. It's a short hop. So our riders tend to be riders of necessity. And the STF is really the base of what we do. The thing that about the special transportation piece of the cigarette tax is that it's not a new tax. It's got historical precedence. It's not a new tax that you're adding. It's there. It was developed for a purpose, and I think it should be updated to where it can support what it was intended to. And I would like to see further that some kind of incremental biennium or every other biennium that it could update itself somehow. So from a provider perspective, that's been one of our just solid base foundations that we really need. So I've taken up probably too much time. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
No, you're fine. And I have a question over here, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. It's more of a comment, really, because I'm not, and it may be a question. And I've been pestering my friend here to my right because he's on revenue, and I understand we have four members on revenue on this committee. Mm-hmm. One, if there's a sunset on that cigarette tax, we should remove it. Two, I support an increase. I don't know what level yet. But three, I hope that that doesn't get balled up with some big, giant cigarette increase.
That's
which
what I'm worried.
I'm skittish about myself, that we separate those out. Because it is, don't worry about it. You're forgiven. Anyway, I'm taking liberty, Madam Chair. But anyway, but those three things. One, if there's a sunset, get rid of it. I support some kind of increase. And then it doesn't get wrapped up in this larger conversation of cigarette tax increase. Because clearly, if it does, and then we lose it, or there's this, I'm mainly talking to my friends and colleagues that are on revenue, so...
Yes. Representative Benz.
Madam Chair, thank you. I actually have a question as opposed to a presentation. And Mary Jo, I'm very, very happy you drove all the way over, and I'm sure Representative Berger is happy you stayed and spent money. So
very
maybe that
happy.
Will sway her vote on the Revenue Committee. I think she is one of those revenue members, so that's a good thing. But now my question, I think in the past we've talked about the number of folks that you provide transportation to that are allowed to then to stay in their homes and thus reduce the cost of that we might otherwise be paying.
Yeah.
And just setting it over to the side for a moment, it seems from my observation of Baker and Halfway and all those small communities, they all seem to be getting older. And whether that has anything to do with, who knows, the economy, but they're getting older. So the demands on for your services are becoming greater. So this question of whether you are actually keeping costs down for the state is of great interest to us. Do you think that's the case?
Yes. Representative Benz, Madam Chair, we held public hearings as part of this coordination process, and we really had some... Halfway in Richland, interestingly, both had some really good participation. We had, and actually Sumter did too, but one of the comments that really struck me as, they know we provide Meals on Wheels, we do other things as well. And a comment that struck me is that this is not only are they getting older, but they're also designated as low-income communities. And the comment they made was, well, when we get old enough, we move to Baker and go to a nursing home. Or, if we get sick, when we move to Baker and go to a nursing home. So there is absolutely the recognition that they stay up there and stay home just as long as they can and as long as they've got family support, social supports, whatever. But when they get too sick or can't make it anymore, I mean, that statement was just made almost verbatim that when we get too sick or whatever, we'll move to Baker to a nursing home. So I believe that's a true statement. As long as they've got the supports, they'll stay where they can.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see. Hope I can represent. Excuse me, Representative Widener.
Madam Chair, you may want to warn Mrs. Lewis about her time. Sometimes she can go long.
Welcome.
Thank you, Representative. Madam Chair, committee members, I'm Leslie Lewis.
She talks fast.
Yeah, I do that, too. I can also talk fast. I'm Leslie Lewis, and I am currently a Yamhill County Commissioner. I'm chair of the board this year. I am also chair of a relatively new board that we started, and it is for our transit district. It's called the Yamhill County Transit Area. It is a county service district, and we started this a number of years ago. 2 years ago, I believe, the district was formed. But that was after many years of experience starting very small, much as Mary Jo, and I apologize, I didn't catch your last name, much as Mary Jo said, our public transit system in Yamhill County started very small. Some of you may know I did serve in this body in the 1990s, great pleasure to serve here, and I also had the extreme pleasure of being co-chair of Ways and Means in the 1999 session. During that session, we were able to add about $9 million, I believe, in general fund dollars to senior and disabled transit. Now, I know very well your fiscal difficulties that you've had this decade, and I know that those general fund dollars have disappeared, but that was a very important source of funding for senior and disabled transit. And we clearly need to continue to find funding to provide these special needs services. So let me talk a little bit about our transit system in Yamhill County. It's been an interesting process the last 8 years. I've worked on it as a county commissioner. We started with two providers, and one provider is our Community Action Partnership, YCAP. And so their mission largely was to serve, low-income folks, but they did also provide senior and disabled transit. We also have a provider in the Newburgh area called Chehalem Valley Senior Citizens Council. And as their name sounds, they started up mainly to provide services to seniors, much as Mary Jo said, the senior bus. We also had some service providers that provide just their clients. We have a very good program called Mid-Valley Rehabilitation, which provides job opportunities and training opportunities to people with developmental disabilities. And Mid-Valley was running buses also. So that was the state of Yamhill County's transit services back in the 1990s. None of these providers really coordinated with each other. They all had their separate little pots of funding. YCAP ran one fixed route in McMinnville. Chehalem Valley Senior Citizens Council ran a fixed route in Newburgh. And they also ran about five runs a day that went from McMinnville to Sherwood, sort of a commuter route. Well, we began in the early 2000s realizing with a lot of help from volunteers in our community, went through a lot of public process. In fact, one of our volunteers is sitting in the back of the room, Peter Schultz, and he chaired a couple of our committees for a number of years. And through the good work of these volunteers, we sat down and we said, what can we do to better provide public transit? And for people to realize it's not the senior bus, because a lot of folks won't get on it because they think, well, that little white bus, it's just for seniors and disabled. And we truly wanted to have public transit. So through a lot of efforts of a lot of people, we decided we would get these providers together, we would pool our resources, we'd try to figure out how we could aggressively go for different kinds of grant opportunities, both at the federal and the state level, and we would work hard to build a backbone of the system that connects all of our communities, and we have 10 cities in Yamhill County. And so we've gone from very limited service to now we serve all 10 cities. We actually have routes that go from Grand Ronde, which is actually in Polk County, but that's a partnership we have with the tribe. We go from Grand Ronde to McMinnville to Sherwood and to connect with TriMet in Sherwood. We have routes that go to Hillsborough Light Rail that allow our citizenry to connect with light rail in Hillsborough. And we have routes now that go to Salem-Keizer Transit for a number of our citizens either live in Yamhill County and work over here, or we have people who live in the Salem area and work in Yamhill County. We also have been able to provide now three fixed routes in McMinnville. We continue to have one fixed route in Newburgh. We have added evening hour services. We have added Saturday services. And we've even started up a program that provides some circulation in the Yamhill-Carlton area that is run by volunteer drivers, though the county did provide the van and provided some of the funding for fuel. We have other communities that would like to do similar things. Sheridan and Wilhelmina do a lot of things together, but they're 7 miles apart, and it's hard for people to get from the senior meal site that's in Sheridan over to Wilhelmina, and so they also would like to start up a local van. So that's kind of how we've grown the system. Our ridership since the time I became commissioner has more than doubled, but just looking in the past three fiscal years, we've gone up 81%. And that great increase in ridership started prior to the time that gas taxes got very high. So the ridership really grew as people began to realize that we had a public transit system. We've installed bus shelters. We've built a website. We have logos on the buses. We have brochures. So we've done a lot to let people know that we have a public transit system. And this has really helped the senior and disabled riders as well. We have been able to partner with Mid-Valley Rehabilitation, and they've actually given up some of their STF dollars and some of their county general fund dollars, which I'll talk about funding in a moment, and they've moved some of their developmentally disabled riders onto the public transit system, and there they use a combination of dial-a-ride and a combination of the fixed routes, and that's much more efficient than having Mid-Valley run their own buses. Talking a little bit about where our funding comes from, we have made a commitment as a county to invest general fund. We don't have a separate property tax levy for transit, but we invest $247,000 in general fund. We increase that every year when we decide on the property tax increase that's going to go to all of our general fund departments at the county. We get the same percentage increase to transit. So that's the county's contribution. In addition to that, we have cities of McMinnville, Newburgh, Lafayette, Willamina, and Sheridan all contributing over $53,000 to the public transit system. The Grand Ronde Tribe is contributing about $43,000, and we actually have the Housing Authority in Yountville County contributing about $6,000. Fares contribute about 11% of our needs. Now, I know that sounds like that's low, but just as Mary Jo said, a lot of our riders are riders of necessity. We do have people who do commute and who probably have pretty decent jobs, and they could probably pay more, but you can't just single out and say, well, you know, okay, you're getting on the bus and you're wearing a suit, you look like you could pay more. Meanwhile, you've got someone else who really needs the ride. And so you can't discriminate and say, well, you look like you could pay more and you look like you should pay less. So we have kept our fares low, though we are probably going to have a fare increase in the next month or so. We have a great need for additional funding, both operational and capital. Our buses are the smaller buses. They're aging. We have two 29-passenger buses in our fleet. The rest of our buses are in the 12 to 18-passenger range. And with the huge increase that we've seen in ridership, we have actually had to tell people they can't get on our bus because we have the smaller cutaway buses, they're called, and they don't allow people to stand. So we have to tell people, nope, sorry, you're going to have to wait for the next bus that comes along, which could be a long time on some of our routes. So we have a need for additional buses, or as I can't remember which one, Mark or Mary Jo said, your other option is to add routes. Well, that takes operational dollars, and we don't have those either. We have been suffering the same cuts in STF funding, as everyone has already told you about. This coming fiscal year, we are anticipating a 3.5% cut in STF funding, and that's on the heels of cuts in the past couple of fiscal years. Also, we have been, ODOT had a wonderful grant program called the STG Discretionary Grant Program, and it was a competitive grant program. And we competed very effectively for that grant program, and we have, I think, been awarded a couple of bienniums over $700,000. We have been told that that formula has program has now changed to a formula. So instead of being able to compete competitively based on our performance, it's just a formula. And so our funding from the STG discretionary grant is going to go down to about $330,000. instead of 700,000. So that is an over 50% cut. We used to use the STG discretionary grants for a combination of operations and buses, but because it's going to be such a large cut, we will only be able to use it for operations because we can't, you know, we can't give up the routes and the services. So we have a great need for continued funding and for additional funding. I know the governor's bill, transportation bill, has some additional funding for public transit and for senior disabled transportation. And I would encourage you, as you're crafting a transportation package, to make sure that you do include something for public transit and senior and disabled transit. I know there's also several bills, including Chair Byers' bill on increasing the cigarette tax. I would echo what everyone has said, that you know, that is certainly one route to go. I do worry about if you keep increasing it for other things, it actually reduces the cigarette tax the revenues that we all get, because people will make other choices. So I'm not positive that's the best funding source, but I would encourage you to look at either the increasing the cigarette tax or finding additional funding sources for public transit and senior and disabled transit. And with that, I would close and answer any questions you have.
Thank you. Questions from anybody on the panel? I don't see any. I guess I have a question for you.
Certainly.
Your district... is it a district that is eligible for any of the federal stimulus, or are you?
Yes, we will be able to get some of the federal stimulus dollars, which we are hoping to use to buy some of those additional buses that we have needs for, because that's a desperate need of ours currently.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't see any other questions, and I appreciate you coming, and I appreciate everybody coming today. I think the information was good and kind of gave us a good overview of the size and operations of districts around the state. So thank you again.
Good luck.
Oh. We are adjourned.